114-5-0-2-8, Eric? Coleman shook his head. I don't think I have, unless it refers to Project 114. Nah, this has got nothing to do with the satellite industry. It's an in-game object. I spend time in the game, just like the rest of us, but I've never heard of this object. This name isn't known to anyone, which is why it has a different alias. The players have called it Bug, and it appears to have accepted it. The name is significant, since it normally refers to software errors. Have you never heard any scary stories about a huge yellow smiley face fond of eating players alive, which is impossible to kill whatever you do? Oh, so that's what you're talking about. I had to take care of the mess with the Russians because of that thing back in the day. They used to call it a funny name, Kolobok. As far as I know, it stands for an ancient type of fried bread that hails from Russia. Yeah, that's what the Ruskies call it. I even got the impression that they express a certain kind of sympathy when they talk about this yellow piece of trash. Well, the Ruskies are weird, but we're not talking about them now. Haven't you ever mused on the fact that a universe as balanced as the Second World should tolerate as egregious an error for so long? Pardon my ignorance, but my profession does not imply in-depth knowledge of game mechanics. I didn't think it was an error. You should have given it some thought. Second World can have no indestructible characters, after all. That goes against the main laws of game mechanics. I get it. It's a bug, after all. But that wasn't what you wanted to tell me, was it now? Eric, you really need to learn to see the larger scheme of things, even if you only manage to become vaguely aware of it. The bug is not an error. There are no errors in the Second World. It's ideal. Much better than ours, in fact. Otherwise, all this hullabaloo wouldn't have made any sense. One's consciousness is always oriented toward the ideal, and that is precisely what we're betting on. I see that you're a bit confused about the whole thing. Anyway, Object 114-5-0-2-8 was created under my direct supervision. I gave all the orders, and yet I couldn't place it in Second World. Its control system would immediately recognize a critical error and look for a way to correct it. However, I'm as good as any silicon brain, so I can do all the correction I need personally. Take a closer look at this. What do you see? The old man pointed toward the hologram. Coleman shrugged. I have no idea, but it's the most repulsive thing I've seen to date. I assume it's a representative of the Second World fauna, a particularly unpleasant monster, possibly a boss, another in-game object, and there's an abundance of those. You're right. What you see is Object 114-5-0-2-9, but I prefer to call this beauty the Annihilator. Unlike the bug, it isn't known to the general public, but it doesn't make it less interesting. The bug is an indestructible object, and its existence goes against the laws of the Second World. So if you somehow manage to allow the creation of such an object, you need to add the condition that the indestructible can yet be destroyed to the game mechanics before the AI control system gets a chance to react. That was how the Annihilator came into existence. You mean this slug can destroy the bug? Well, according to the official taxonomy, this isn't a slug. It's a terrestrial phosphorus squid. But yeah, you're right. The Annihilator is the only character that can destroy the bug. However, it has plenty of other features. The bug's defenses are manifold. One would need to launch an attack from every direction to overcome it, so the AI control system can occasionally fail to run it through its logic circuits. However, the Annihilator is controlled by a dedicated AI programmed in a specific manner, without any capacity for in-depth analysis, so there are no ambiguities as much as it's concerned. The monster only has two skills. One allows it to appear anywhere in the world, and the other is used in battle. It burns up all of its mana as it deals damage to a single target. This target is destroyed completely and erased from the game world irretrievably. This is what we call annihilation. So if the target is a player, the player will not respawn. In fact, they'll cease to exist, and they'll find an empty shell, IRL, a dead body. But that's impossible. It's possible if the player isn't a newcomer, but rather belongs to the type that spend a great deal of time inside the game, either deliberately or not. Such a player becomes a part of the game, and the game becomes a part of their consciousness. In extreme cases, the body and the mind can be separated. That's how you get those ghosts and other players stuck in the game without an option of getting out. The player will be erased, since the Annihilator's weapons work indiscriminately, leaving nothing behind. There will be no mind left to return to the body. Why would you create something as hideous as that anyway? The old man gave Eric a sly wink, but immediately winced and started to massage his ribcage. "Eric, you're perfectly aware of the fact that I'm a mean-tempered old ruin. Something like this," a wrinkled hand pointed toward the capsule, "might come in handy when someone who spends too much time in the game starts to give you grief. However, its primary purpose is to eliminate the waste. You probably get what I'm talking about." "Yeah, I've always wondered about how you'd make them keep their mouths shut after..." "You probably guessed I had something up my sleeve for such a case," the old man cackled slyly. "I had my suspicions. Do any of the others know?" "I have decided they don't necessarily have to be aware of all the details. I have told this to you, and that should do. And yes, it turns out that the Annihilator's control panel will accept no one but me. So I'm the only one who can sick this squid onto the quarry."
"Why am I not surprised?"
"That's right, Eric. This slimy thing is a dangerous weapon."
"How soon do you intend to dispatch Rostovstev?"
"Well, we need to find him first."
"That much is just a question of time, and it won't take long. Analysts predict his further moves based on the fact that he's a serious player now, and that the control AIs get the heebie-jeebies when they react to his actions. They claim that the result is all but guaranteed."
"But they haven't managed to accomplish anything yet."
"They haven't."
"Find him, and have a chat with him. But don't do it like those two-bit hoodlums whose best idea was to put him in a cage. Talk to him in the proper way. His death would not be the ultimate solution to all our problems. Rostovstev may be replaced by someone just as dangerous. We need to find out absolutely everything. And if we cannot solve this by force, we can come to a settlement. What we need is some link to the party that had made Rostovstev infiltrate the game, and we also need to know what he knows. According to the analysts, he has a much higher chance of completing this goddamn endless quest."
"Why did you show me the Annihilator, if you only intend to converse?"
"Well, there are all sorts of conversations. We'll discuss our affairs. We might get into a heated dispute, or smile at one another.
and then we might introduce him to our unseemly friend. There are all kinds of challenges to be dealt with, after all." The old man's smile didn't reach his eyes as he stared at the hologram depicting the monster. Chapter 7 Thiri had given excellent directions to the place where she'd be waiting for Ross, but he still didn't manage to find her, no matter how hard he tried. The oaks were easy enough to find, but the girl was nowhere around. He tried to message her, but there was no reply. She was either far enough away for the game's communications system to have no coverage, didn't feel like answering, or still remained offline. In the latter case, Ross could forget about finding her altogether. Players with names displayed in red lettering were adept at hiding their bodies. Coupled with impressive disguise skills, even combing a given area might prove futile. Ross took a rest on the soft grass, munched on some meat, and studied the forum, scanning the hot topics and reading the messages from Digits and Danger Babe. The former kept writing about all sorts of financial transactions, current and planned. The latter complained that she and Tang got killed today, and it was by no means the first time since Ross's departure. However, the two of them had some good news, too. They managed to discover a new dungeon. It was a rare stroke of luck, the only explanation being that the locked lands opened very recently and that the overwhelming majority of the players had considerable problems with finding access to these territories. Once Ross would complete his task, everything would change drastically, so they'd have to explore the precious cave as soon as they could, or some other player might get to it first. They were wary of going in without Ross. They had every reason to be cautious. They ran into dangerous situations even when facing regular monsters, and every creature they would meet in the murky dungeon would be much harder to deal with. Ross told them to keep away from the entrance, lest they attract someone's attention. He also asked them to give him an approximate list of the equipment Tang and Danger Babe would need to complete the dungeon. In-game funds came in particularly handy when you had to beef your characters up to the max. However, something like that cost a lot. A hell of a lot. Then he got bored and decided to make a present for his mysterious companion. He started to get all kinds of materials from his bag, mixing all them up in the unique transmogrification cube of the Craftsman's Guildmaster from the Locked Lands. Sometimes there was no result at all. At other times, the attempt itself was successful, but the resulting item turned out to be total junk, or just unimpressive. However, Ross had managed to craft a couple of really nice items, and decided to keep at it. The reward wasn't long in the coming. "You create a ring of red pain from the Locked Lands. Attention, you have created a unique item. It has no duplicate anywhere in the Second World. You receive a reward, +1 to magical transmogrification, +1 to invention, +1 to creator, +1 to learner, and +1 to arcane knowledge. You gain a level. Points left until the next level, 917,424. You can create blueprints for a new item, the Ring of Red Pain from the Locked Lands. Attention, you have created an item using ingredients no one had ever used before. Some of the properties of the following ingredients have been studied. Moss Shadowcrawler Bone. You have demonstrated real ingenuity. You receive a reward. +2 to reason. Attention, your arcane knowledge stat reaches 25. You can learn of a previously undiscovered feature of any object once daily without using or destroying it." Ross looked about him furtively. What if some stranger decided to steal his precious at this very moment? It was a cool enough ring with a well-balanced set of stats. Any warrior would love it. Tanks could wear it as well, although they wouldn't get all the benefits. It was a unique item, so he could probably make a small fortune after selling it. He decided he would call it a day inasmuch as crafting was concerned. He'd get to it later, and without going all out. Trying one's luck from morning till night would not be a very bright idea. It could turn bad, after all. His friends Tang and Danger Babe were doing the job of three players in the Locked Lands right now, sourcing the rarest materials that he could use for some serious crafting once he got back. He would buy all sorts of local ingredients at the capital, choosing the best ones, and then experiment at length with different combinations of whatever he would find. Apart from other things, he had lots of really cool items on him that he had gotten from monsters or crafted personally. He was planning to use the help of his friend Digits to sell it quickly and for a decent price, so he reckoned he'd be able to get enough money for all those grandiose plans of his. The first stage, that was.
"Well, hi there," said a voice from behind.
He was so startled, he nearly jumped. Then he breathed out with relief and said without turning around, "Hello to you too, Theory. I'd rather you didn't scare me like that. I didn't notice you."
"Sorry, no one ever notices me. Anywhere."
The last words were uttered in a rather sad voice, but Ross decided against prying. She would share whatever she chose, whenever she chose. Decent players never tried to get under someone's skin. Although he'd be really interested in doing just that, given the opportunity, there were a few questions he would really like to get some answers to.
"So, how did it go? They didn't catch up with you, did they?"
"They haven't. I haven't even seen them once."
"That's weird. They have real good trackers. That clan is pretty powerful."
"I would not have escaped them IRL. However, the game offers plenty of opportunities for pulling wool over someone's eyes. That is to say, I appear to have turned out a little more cunning than them."
"That's great, because we may run into them again. I don't think they've left the area, so you should keep your cunning handy."
"Here are your rings."
"Thanks. Hey, you've given me an extra one."
"It's yours now."
"It's pretty expensive. I'd hate to lose it. Thanks, but I'd rather you took it back."
Ross shrugged. "As you wish. I hope you will at least accept the boots. I made them with you in mind. Didn't want you to go barefoot."
"Are you a cobbler or something?"
"Well, I can work leather, but I wouldn't claim any great skill so far. You can see as much anyway."
"As a matter of fact, they're better than the ones I'd left behind. Thanks. How much do I owe you?"
Ross made a dismissive gesture. "That's nothing. You have helped me out, and I have killed you as a sign of gratitude. You could say I was doing it for my conscience. I keep getting those pangs all the time. So you shouldn't have refused the ring."
"I told you already, I'm likely to lose it, and I'd hate whoever would be around at that point to mock a silly girl with holes in her pockets.
If you're dead, you won't hear anything. Take it already. I have to soothe my bleeding conscience."
"All right, then. Thank you."
I have explored the game forum, and there's nothing on the tarantulas there. That is, no one's been discussing what they'd been getting up to here so far.
"They talk to each other on their game forum. You'd have no access there."
"Yeah, I've figured out as much. Anyway, we know nothing of their current disposition. I suggest that we make a detour around the village and then head right through the forest. It has plenty of thickets, and the undead are supposed to haunt it at night. But they level at 100 at best, so we have a good chance, even if we run into a serious pack. We'll come to a valley with three rivers running across it later on. There will be nothing there but meadows and bushes. The most dangerous mobs there were foxes and rabbits. Even characters of really puny levels could use this area for leveling up, provided they were prepared to travel that far. Then we'll be crossing locations with mobs leveling around 50 or 80, very popular for leveling up with characters like me.
If you don't get your name back in the white by then, it might be best for you to avoid them. There's a bunch of red-named folks of all sorts running around, and even more players hunting them. What do you mean, of all sorts? I mean they can be of all sorts of levels, and some of them can be real tough bastards. Also, such areas are favored by clans specializing in hunting player killers. Those wouldn't be particularly salubrious in your case right now. I'd need pretty high-level mobs to get my name into the white once again. There are none such here. We'd have to go back to where we'd met the first time, and we'd have to make lots of detours to avoid the tarantulas. There are lots of high-level players there, and killing someone like you, with no clan and no protection, would be a sport for many of them. A lot of them get triggered by red names. That's right. My best chance here is to keep a low profile. I've only got a single murder to account for. There wasn't much karmic damage, so it should whiten by itself soon enough. How soon is soon enough? Around 5 days? Well, damn. What's the matter? If we're lucky, we'll reach the capital a lot quicker than that, and once we get there, you'll be a magnet for PKs and PK killers alike. The location is really popular with both. Let's cross that bridge once we get to it.
I will suck out your miserable souls, steeped in sin, and your bodies will be but dust strewn to the wind and falling on the filthy floor of a century-old grave.
A ghost glowing green must have decided that his words weren't enough to scare the two players bold enough to invade his domain as it rose out of the grave, and so it decided to laugh theatrically for emphasis. I can't remember ever seeing someone who'd wag their tongue as much, said Theory, unperturbed. Take a look at me and assess the difference yourself. It would take a single sneeze in your direction to turn you into a puddle of green snot. The ghost must have not been a complete idiot. It stopped making menacing gestures with its bony hands and took a good look at Theory. Its face had already been rather glum, but now it became completely lugubrious. The green glow subsided considerably. Then the ghost's attention switched to Ross, and it became a little more animated. It instantly suggested what must have seemed a mutually beneficial solution.
"Hey, big thing, why don't you leave this worthless worm to me and depart? I release you. Go in peace, live long and prosper. Why can't I show a little magnanimity?"
Theory sighed. "Why are the lot of you so thick-headed?" Then she instantly drew her bow and shot the ghost with an arrow that lit up as she released it. The mob squeaked in horror and disappeared, leaving nothing but a green puddle of slime that looked so unappetizing that Ross felt he would forego searching it for valuable loot this time. At any rate, what loot could he find when the level gap between the killer and the quarry had been so great? You kill the Chatterbox Ghost. XP received 107. Points left until the next level, 902,439.
The developers must have spent a long time trying to think of a name for this weirdo, said Ross, mockingly.
They sure did. The lack of any sense of humor must have been a necessary requirement and indicated as such in their CVs. They would just say the first thing that came into their heads. We're getting closer to the edge of the woods. There'll be a valley where three rivers merge into one once we cross that. I'd like to get offline for 2 or 3 hours once we get to the border. Will you wait on me?
I might. Then again, I might not.
Is there any chance to make sure you do it without any of that might-not business?
Theory.
Had I really wanted to leave, I would have done it already, and you would never have found me. And yet you didn't.
They haven't. I ran into something lately. I find it pretty weird, and you're a part of it. I'd really like to know how you had managed to find out about me and what exactly might be going on around me. I have looked into every forum topic, but there's nothing remotely similar to our case there.
It may be a case of me being unique, or things like these happen so rarely that you cannot find any relevant information anywhere. Would there be anything you'd like to tell me? I am referring to the circumstances of our first encounter. Theory stayed silent for a few moments, turning away. Then she said in a barely audible voice,
"Ross, I have nothing to tell you."
"I get it. It's not that I'm hiding anything. I don't know anything myself. But how can something like that happen?"
"It can. The game has many oddities about it. Haven't you noticed any yourself?"
"Well, I have to admit that lots of things have happened to me, but I cannot imagine a situation when I would walk for miles in order to wait for some perfect stranger in a wet shrub without knowing why all of a sudden. And then I'd protect that player from an attack and tag along like a faithful little pooch, trying to help them to the best of my ability."
"You're right. It seems unlikely enough."
"Exactly.
Well, I didn't start playing for entertainment.
You were planning to make some money, weren't you?"
"What made you think that?"
"Your name is silly. Sorry, I mean, it's been generated by the game's registration algorithms. Therinawaria Reyneilla is not a name one would choose of their own volition. Such names are usually given to players who try to minimize their expenses. You normally see such names given to worker characters with the cheapest accounts. Ross knew all about it. His name had neither been Ross nor even Bubble originally. It was Rostendrix Poterentax, quite a hideous mouthful all in all. He found it a mouthful himself, so he shortened it as much as he could."
"Well, I didn't choose it."
"Thought as much.
I told you, I didn't come here for entertainment. I was placed here. Or rather, brought here. It was necessary because of, well, there were a few problems, IRL. I'd prefer not to discuss them."
"I really can't believe you ended up in those bushes because of the problems you had, IRL.
Well, if it hadn't been for those problems, I wouldn't have started playing in the first place. I would... Ah, well, it doesn't matter anymore. I still don't know who I am here. I can't really find a place for myself, nor have I really been looking for one. But I've had all sorts of stuff happen to me. It would get pretty tough at times, and real world would add to my problems. There was this one time, I still don't understand what happened then. It felt like I had fallen asleep here, in the game, and I had a dream. A dream of someone. I couldn't recollect his appearance, but I remember what he had told me. He told me lots of useful things and really helped me. When I saw him for the second time in a similar dream, I believed everything he told me. He said I should make haste toward that river and meet you, and then help you get wherever you'd be headed to. So I set out to look for you right away. That's the only thing I can tell you. You may or may not believe me, but that's the only answer I have."
"You got information about me in a dream."
"Yeah. I realize it sounds weird, but I did."
Ross was inclined to believe the girl. And not because he was charmed enough to believe anything she'd say. He had a few dreams of the most unusual sort himself, where there was a character whose appearance he could not remember, but whose words stuck in his head nevertheless. And they made a lot of sense, just as in Theory's case. The information received from that voice may not have been of the most useful sort, but it had come in handy nevertheless. He searched through the most obscure corners of game-related forums, official and not, searching for anything he could find about such dreams. All to no avail. Until today. But it wasn't a forum post. He met an actual eyewitness, someone who had the same kind of dreams. Did this voice foretell anything? About the game, I mean. It foretold that you would appear next to the destroyed watermill, at least.
I'm sorry. I cannot tell you all the details. There was a lot of personal stuff there.
Oh,
I didn't mean to pry. All right, then. In that case, I can promise that I'll wait for you at the border.
You mean you believe me?
I do.
All right, then. I'll try to get back as soon as I can.
But there's nothing for you to do beyond the Three River Valley. There are too many people, and it's the most PK-active area in these parts. The place is notorious for it.
It's gonna be dangerous for you without me.
Well, you may have noticed I wasn't your average noob.
I've noticed that, all right.
Those who like to kill fellow players will see a puny level 67 player, and they aren't used to surprises. I, however, have a penchant for surviving.
I'd still like to accompany you to the very gates. I can stay unnoticed, as you should well know by now.
Another thing I know is that such players as you are extremely slow in maximum invisibility mode. How long is it going to take us to get there?
Around 24 hours, once we cross the valley.
It would take me 4 instead of 24, or perhaps even less than that.
But you'll be on your own, and an encounter with a high-level killer may prove fatal to you.
I'll spend a lot more time in a dangerous zone if we stick together. That would be a huge risk, too.
All right, let's get to the border, and then, well, we'll see once we're there.
The wife of the notorious professor Aurelio Barbarossa demands that her husband be legally recognized as deceased, disregarding the proper legal procedure to initiate the process of sharing his estate. The relatives of the scientist who had vanished support her. The professor is known to have vanished 5 months ago. However, no signs of foul play were found by the police during their investigation. What they did find, however, was indirect evidence that Barbarossa may have left the country accompanied by his young assistant, who is also known to have disappeared at the same time. Thus, there was no reason to believe that the vanished professor was killed or died a natural death. However, if without serious evidence that the vanished person is still alive, they may be officially recognized as deceased after a certain period. No such evidence has been found to date, and the indirect leads do not carry sufficient legal weight. But the period has not expired to date, and thus the statement made by the wife's attorney might imply that Aurelio Barbarossa is still alive and is trying to rake up more notoriety. That's what he's been best known for all these years. However, it has to be said that his notoriety was anything but a classical example of tabloid fame. He became famous after having published a number of seminal works that have redefined modern psychology. In particular, we have to point out his work entitled The Parallel Consciousness, which was a trailblazing work in a discipline that is complex and convoluted. He was widely known as one of the theorists that helped bring about the latest generation AI technology. Such AIs are widely used by the military and the gaming industry these days. He was also famous about his predictions concerning the effect of the separation of the body and the consciousness in a highly detailed gaming environment made around the time he first started work as a consultant for the famed Second World Project. As everyone well remembers, shortly after the launch of the game, there were many reported instances of the players' minds staying in the game. In other words, they failed to return to their bodies. Moreover, the problem of ghosts or digital people emerged shortly afterwards. The terms are currently used for referring to the phenomenon of the consciousness becoming disconnected from the body permanently. More specifically, this concerned the players whose real bodies ceased to exist for one reason or another, but whose characters kept on existing in the game temporarily or permanently. We must remind the readers that no other project ever experienced anything of the sort. One of those boring articles no one would ever bother to print out, published online. Chapter 8. Thierry may have trusted Ross, but not enough to leave her body where he could see it. She returned into the greenish mist that had hung over the nearest part of the murky wood and used her disguise skill somewhere in there without any fear for the undead roaming the treacherous forest. Ross stayed alone. He didn't perceive any real danger here at the edge of the woods. Apart from that, the undead weren't very active during the mornings, unless they haunted deep dungeons where no light ever shone. Yet he tried to get as far away from the woods as he could. The last thing he wanted to do was get involved with a bunch of high-level ghosts of the sort that you encountered here. He descended a low-sloped, grassy slope with a narrow but swift stream meandering underneath. The crystalline water babbled happily between the mossy rocks, with shoals of fast-moving baby fish and individual fish of a larger size swimming in the water, and rows of frogs lined up alongside the shores. There were reeds growing around the ox boughs, and Ross decided to choose one of such places. It would be hard to spot him among the tall reeds, but he could observe all around him. There were no shrubs or trees anywhere, and an observant watcher could see quite a few things. Yet there was nothing much to see. The edge of the woods was the border between two areas of a fundamentally different nature. Back there, you could run into a level 100 ghost any time, or encounter a group of malodorous and clumsy level 80 zombies. On the other hand, you could walk for hours without encountering a single enemy, especially during the daytime, so the zone wasn't particularly good for those wishing to level up, since you would waste plenty of time hunting for the kind of mobs you'd need. There were a few destroyed villages around with plenty of fiends haunting them, but even an average party of players could kill all of them in 3 or 4 hours, which wasn't anywhere near enough for having real fun. Thus, it was one of those second-world locations where there was nothing much to do. Only a rare and complex quest could take one somewhere like that, or a wish to spend a few days roaming on your own, without having to talk to any other players or endlessly fight monsters of all sorts. There were many players who loved to spend their time in this very way. In fact, it could be very beneficial at times. For instance, if someone was gathering herbs to level up their alchemy skill, there'd be no reason for them to do anything else. All you needed to do was search for whatever you needed, and then gather the ingredients and combine them. The Three River Valley was a whole different kettle of fish. There were no murky thickets over there. On the contrary, it was a wide open space filled with sunlight. The grass on the meadows grew low, as though it had been mowed. The rolling hills were clear of trees. There were just a few sparse copses here and there. You could run into a level 100 ghost here, too, in theory, since the mob's respawn points had no fixed locations, but something like that would be very unlikely. The majority of monsters preferred to keep close to their pre-programmed locations, so this was a peaceful reign of small rodents, trustful rabbits, abundant with well-fed pheasants and wild turkeys, with cunning foxes cunning them. The places where you could run into lone wolves or packs of wolf cubs were few and far between. This was a paradise for newborn characters. The mob's levels were between 1 and 7, and none of them were aggressive. The chances of running into something dangerous and evil were negligible. The capital was near. It was a popular place with the players who could afford to pay for getting to choose where they would incarnate for the first time. However, just like the murky woods, the Three River Valley wasn't really popular, and there were reasons for it. You'd have to waste half a day to walk here from the capital. Low-level characters couldn't use riding pets, after all. So what would happen next? It would take one a few hours to reach the 8th or the 10th level, hunting the local fauna, if one really put some effort into it. If one took the trouble of reading the game forum and visited a few places where there was a chance of getting a side quest, one could reach that limit even faster. But why was it the limit? The reason was that it made the most sense to use monsters of approximately one's own level for leveling up. Killing those of a higher level would be useful in terms of experience and the chance of receiving valuable loot. However, if you settled for small fry, you'd have to expect the rewards to be a lot less substantial. Once the level gap got sufficiently great, they would dwindle almost to nothing, and the progress would stop. That meant that once you got 3 levels higher than the foxes, which hardly ever grew higher than level 8, you'd have to find a new location with the kind of game you could hunt more profitably. Therefore, one would have to hunt monsters leveling around 8 or 10, or perhaps a little higher, but nowhere above 15, since they were, for the most part, too dangerous for low-level individual players, and it made no sense to form at the very dawn of one's gaming career. One needed to grow stronger to form a team. Ross encountered no mobs leveling below 80 in the murky woods. The ones you would expect to meet leveled between 50 and 80. Exceptions were few and far between, and never deviated from the standard levels much. Thus, level 10 players would have nothing to occupy themselves with in this area. There was a better place at a distance, but they'd have to waste a day crossing a valley rife with useless low-level mobs. It would take almost 24 hours on foot. It would have been much easier to return to the capital or make a detour. There were lots of useful locations behind it, and you wouldn't have to waste time on a taxing journey once you got to your stat maximum. That was why there were few players wishing to marvel at the wonders of the Three River Valley. That suited Ross just fine. He was a loner by nature. And the fact that the Iron Hills would be the next location was already sufficient. That was the very location for those wishing to level up over 50. According to the statistics, the majority of characters belonged to that category, yet there were few places where they could level up comfortably, so there would be an overabundance of players there. Those who liked to amuse themselves by killing noobs were perfectly aware of that, and they had no interest in roaming empty areas in hope to find someone sooner or later, since they preferred a guaranteed outcome. This was why such places were haunted by hordes of archers, mages, and specialists in invisibility of all sorts, the kind that preferred to hit you from a distance or from behind, winning a battle where the fighters weren't matched evenly in a single sudden attack. How much does it take to kill a noob? A single cheap arrow or a spell? It would be hard to run away from a high-level player in the first place. When they ambushed you when you expected no foul play, you hardly had a chance. On the other hand, if you killed a player whose name was displayed in white, you got karma points. The lettering of the name displayed over your head reddened as a result. The redder the color, the more penalties imposed while alive, and most importantly, after death. Any conflict can result in the loss of valuable property and a good chunk of your XP. Those who really liked to hunt noobs with impunity were hunted in turn. Some were wishing to get hold of the loot you dropped. Others remembered old slights done by the likes of you and always felt like revenge. Others still strove to be remembered as protectors of noobs, or just wanted to hunt the hunters for the hell of it.
There were even minor clans whose entire ideology was based on protecting newbies from attacks from other players trying to have fun at their expense. There were even a few major guilds who practiced it as a side business. They could recruit promising players as they looked after promising recruits, who in turn were happy to join the heroes capable of giving even the most dangerous red names a taste of their own medicine. In other words, too many interests of all sorts met in such locations as the Iron Hills. They were always a barrel of fun. You never knew what could happen the very next moment. Thus, Ross was enjoying his last peaceful moments. Henceforth, he'd keep running into players, and he could only hope those encounters would be of a pleasant or a neutral nature. That was what he'd been thinking of as he sat in the reeds without doing anything much. He didn't get to the riverbank by chance. He'd been following the first rule of any serious player, and that rule was, not a single minute should be wasted. So what else could one do in an area with useless low-level mobs aplenty? Given the enormous level gap, he'd be unlikely to get any loot, no matter how cheap, in any case. But one can always find a useful task. Thus, Ross chose a pastime he had never indulged in before. Attention, do you intend to create a fishing rod? Yes, no. Yes, was the obvious answer. Ingredient required, piece of cork, possible replacements, a piece of light wood, a singed feather, an arc herb stalk, or a footnar's antenna. Ross didn't have any such feathers, and it would be too boring to try to get one. Also, low-level pheasants were unlikely to drop anything useful. He had no idea of what this herb was or where one could find it. The footnar was out of the question. The mob would likely be a very rare one. That was why he had to go back into the woods, picking up one piece of wood after another and studying them. Finally, he achieved the desired result. You create an item, a novice fisherman's reed rod. Fishing was more than a way of upping your cooking skill in the game. You could find something as you would gut it, if you were lucky. It would normally be junk, but sometimes one could find something to set the entire forum aflame. There were lots of irreplaceable ingredients that could only be gathered like this. You'd have to spend some time sitting on a bridge or a riverbank. Also, once you'd spend enough time fishing, you would open an auxiliary stat, namely, fisherman. Once you would level it up, you would get a few handy bonuses. This was why even some of the most advanced players didn't feel it beneath them to sit down with a fishing rod every now and then. However, they would usually choose the best places for the purpose. As for Ross, he'd have to choose the first one he came across. He wouldn't waste any time. On the other hand, he could take a break and let his eyes rest on the flowing water. Nothing but advantages, come to think of it. And he could watch the local fauna frolicking around, too. You could see a pheasant take off, or a rabbit go about its business in the grass, or a fox sneak through furtively across the far side of the hill. But now, what the hell was this anyway? It took Ross a while to realize that something weird was happening around him. There should have been no overabundance of mobs in such locations. That was just how it was when he had just arrived. But these things kept changing all the time. Formerly, rabbits appeared in ones or in pairs, but now he started to notice groups of three or four. They started to get more numerous shortly. A lot more numerous. And it wasn't just a question of rabbits coming together. The same concerned wild turkeys and pheasants. The birds came over from every direction, either flying or walking, and their numbers came increasing too. All those little creatures seemed to be doing the same as always, namely, wandering back and forth. But no matter how they moved around and what patterns they made, they were invariably attracted to Ross. It barely took him 10 minutes since he dug up enough worms and sat down at the bank with a fishing rod, since he found himself surrounded by nearly 100 of the most harmless denizens of the Three River Valley. They were hardly a menace. Those birds and beasts weren't aggressive, and they'd never attack first. The only way you could make them hurt you was in defense. However, their behavior was suspicious. Ross had never seen anything of the sort previously. At some point, the mobs running here and there gathered at a tiny spot where there was barely enough space for them. Their chaotic crowd started to get more orderly. Ross saw the rabbits' bodies form two parallel lines with pheasants in between, and the wild turkeys forming a triangle at the end. They formed a rather oddly looking arrow, pointing towards the very hill where Ross had seen his first fox. The arrow fell apart in less than a dozen seconds. The mobs had been standing as if paralyzed for a while, and then got back to what they'd been doing. They seemed to be no longer interested in Ross and started to scatter everywhere. In a few minutes, most of them were out of sight, and most of the others nearly so. He was certain that there would soon be no reminders whatsoever that something extraordinary had taken place. On the other hand, was it really extraordinary? You could find a rational or an irrational explanation for anything, or at least search for it. Ross stopped his fishing and started to search through the forum. It was absolutely pointless. He didn't find anything there or in any other sources. No one's ever mentioned that rabbits and other small fry can behave in such a complex and organized manner. On the contrary, they were described as perfectly individualistic and unlikely to act socially. You could kill bunnies with their kin watching. They wouldn't so much as pay attention, let alone try to protect their kin. Ross stopped sifting through all the data, but the Three River Valley kept surprising him. Another living arrow appeared on the hill that had formerly been pointed out to him. This one consisted of no one else but foxes. Their red color could be seen from a long distance against the background of green grass. As Ross got up, he stood on the spot where he had noticed the first arrow, looked into the game map, drew a line between himself and the foxes, which were already scattering, and then onwards. He wasn't much surprised to see it leading to the capital of the Western Empire, the very city he had intended to visit. Some unknown party, capable of making the animals do abnormal things, was telling Ross that it would be really happy if Ross managed to get there shortly. It must have been the same entity that's been trying to help Ross all the while, saddling him with high-level companions. This entity could protect him and find him wherever he was. Those were all pieces of the same puzzle. Who could this entity be? Ross had no answer, nor did he have any idea of this entity's intentions. They could have been good or malicious. However, so far, he hasn't seen any harm. There hasn't been that much help, either. On the other hand, if he recalled his gaming history... How did the whole thing begin? He had no intention of playing in the first place. He wasn't even aware of the Second World's existence. He was working on a top-secret project where all the specialists were placed in a top-security environment with no outside access. They worked on the finer parts of auxiliary elements used for state-of-the-art AI systems. AI peripherals, as it were, what amounted to their arms, legs, and eyes. The contract specified a certain period, but they could not leave the compound until it would expire. Then the accident happened. His body became crippled so thoroughly that the game became his only chance for survival. But was it really his only chance? That's what they told him. Who was they? Someone he knew intimately and trusted completely. He may indeed have considered it the best option for Ross, but that still didn't rule out the possibility he hadn't been telling him everything and had ulterior motives Ross knew nothing about. His mission may have been to nudge Ross toward a certain decision. What would happen next? Next, Ross would end up in a game that would completely baffle him initially. He wasn't just a beginner. He was a total noob, none too bright, and successfully running into every trap for noobs there had been at the beginning. But that was just the beginning. Ross was trapped in a character whose abilities were so limited that he didn't even have access to any useful information or the ability to level up. Yet he started bettering himself at top speed, gathering a lot of valuable knowledge and skills, and managing to get weapons that were the equivalent of thermonuclear warheads for a noob like him. This was unprecedented and made no sense. Yet this noob did manage to get hold of an incredibly cool thing, namely a battle pet of the highest level, and he didn't invest any effort into it. It was a pretty random occurrence. He was just experimenting and trying to see if he could squeeze something out of his seemingly useless character. There was more later. Ross's character was no longer bound by any restrictions and started doing unthinkable things. He had so many achievements to his name that a real manhunt started, with him being the quarry. Everybody wanted Ross now. Even the strongest clans wished to get their hands on such a weird and valuable noob. One of them almost manages to get away with it, but their plot is thwarted by a momentous event that no one could have foreseen. And so Ross was free once again, even though there were some restrictions, and in a place where he couldn't be reached. He was doing the same thing he always did there. The impossible. In the meantime, he was raising his awareness of everything that concerned the gaming process. Now he had knowledgeable friends as well as access to the goldmine of information available online. He was also performing a high-level quest, and some unknown party was repeatedly offering him high-level protection, no matter how strange it looked, and drawing arrows made out of mobs so that Ross wouldn't lose direction. If that someone was trying to mock him, the mockery was on a level he could not perceive. Someone whose abilities could only be guessed at was really eager for Ross to reach the capital, and this someone thought nothing of wasting the poor animal's time to give him another reminder, as well as an idea of what they were capable of. Who was it? What was the point of all this? What the hell was going on around Ross anyway? He had no answer. What would happen if you took some rat poison and logged on? Would you stay in the game forever when you died? Oh, and there's another question. What about paying your account fees? Or would you be able to play for free in such a case? The Red Name Clan announces a new game event, Total Butthurt. Its exact nature is a secret smeared in blood from noob butts ripped apart. The event starts right now. The location is the Iron Hills. Noobs, you might as well hang yourselves. 2 forum messages from the Flood and Spam category. Chapter 9. Theory shook her head.
Sorry, but I have to disagree. I cannot leave you here. It's going to be dangerous, and I'm strong enough to protect you.
You'll just keep attracting unnecessary attention.
And you're so weak, they could kill you before you so much as noticed an attack. And I'll notice it. I notice everything.
Yeah, like someone with a name as red as yours should set off in search of adventure. And once you run into problems, they'll be my problems too. If the PK hunters decide we're a team, they can snuff me just as easily, just to send me a message about the kind of company I should and should not keep. They'll never find out, and they'd have to spot me first. So, we'll have to drag our asses for 24 hours. You'll go offline sooner or later anyway, and I'll have to stay. Why so long? You can walk faster. I won't be completely invisible in that case, but that doesn't matter. Low-level players won't be able to see me anyway. Just avoid open spaces, and that's that. There's a much easier way of doing this. What exactly would it be? Right now, I can send you to a place abundant with all sorts of high-level monsters, just around your level.